Thank you to our sponsor, Datadog, a SaaS cloud monitoring platform for cloud infrastructure and applications. Datadog integrates seamlessly with more than 400 technologies, including Microsoft Azure, Azure Service Bus, Cosmos DB, Azure VM, PagerDuty, Gremlin, and more. Start visualizing all your Azure metrics in real time with out-of-the-box dashboards, alerting, application performance monitoring, and log management in one tightly integrated platform. Try Datadog free, and listeners of this podcast will also receive a free Datadog t-shirt. Visit datadog.com/Microsoft Cloud Show to get started.
This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 361. Today, AC and I are going to talk about Microsoft Build Conference 2020 and recap all the news, recorded live the 22nd of May, 2020.
This episode is brought to you by ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night? Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admin control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations in a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit sharegate.com/overcast_CS. Back to the show.
Good morning, AC.
That's a lot of 20s in the intro.
I was all confused. I was getting all tripping up over my words, not to mention all the rude symbols you're making over the Zoom and trying to put me off.
I know nothing about what you're talking about because I can't see my own thing.
Nothing.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, actually. I'm good. I'm recovering from a week of news and bamboozlement from Build and trying to get some work done at the same time and virtual conference that I actually feel like they didn't do a terrible job of, which was great. We're going to get into what we thought was good, what we thought was not so good, and then what we thought was meh.
Yeah, yeah.
About Build this year.
This is, and like we thought last week when we went through and we talked about that we had the book of news and we were talking about stuff that we expected to be coming out this past week or this week, there was a lot of stuff that was held that was a surprise to us. And I guess overall, this whole show is all going to be a recap about some Build stuff. So, you know, we'll just preface this that we have put a boatload of links in the show notes, so much that my wife is the one that actually builds the show notes for us, and she is going to be pissed when she sees
our show notes today.
So, I'm just going to have to apologize to her for that one to make it up to her. Her birthday was last week, and we definitely gave her a very nice quarantine birthday.
Yeah.
And this is going to be your dose back to reality, so I hate to. Anyway.
Well, she does a fantastic job of it. So
I thought so. Hey, what did you think overall? What did you think about, not about content, but what did you think about the conference?
I thought it was done much better than I expected. Mm. I was expecting an absolute shambles, to be honest, because I still don't think there's a good conference platform that Microsoft settled on for doing these virtual events. And I just thought it was going to be a real mess. But unlike MVP Summit, there were some things that I thought were done much, much better, like session scheduling. Although,
we'll get into
there's
that.
There's no calendar feed, right? But you could download individual session calendar items, right? So that was a bit annoying. There was no, like, you couldn't subscribe to your calendar feed. But I thought in general, finding sessions was a lot smoother. There was a lot more content. The things that I did tune into went much smoother, which I thought was really good. I was unsure about the whole content 24 hours a day thing. And what I would have appreciated in the session builder, for example, was which time zone am I in and what are the live sessions that I could tune into as opposed to what sessions are on at the times that I'm awake. Mm-hmm. Because I found myself going through this massive, big, long list of content and not really knowing, like I'd have to look at the times and see and wasn't sure if it was a repeat or if it was recorded or whatever. And anyway, there was just a lot of nitty peek. But in general, actually, you know, not too bad. How about you?
It was fine. When we do our great, good, and meh, I'll give you my 2 cents on it, on that part. But I'll just leave it at that. I hope they learn a lot, and I hope that they make adjustments before they do Ignite later this year.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
I'm not satisfied with the experience. And I thought that there was, I thought it's as hard to put this on and it's hard to do this. This wasn't, I'm sure that you'd want a lot more time to plan this out. I thought that they had plenty of time. I mean, we're looking at almost a full 2 months when they made this decision for them to cancel their virtual event, for cancel the in-person event and start switching on it. And 2 months is a lot of time, but it's a lot of time. It's also kind of challenging because everybody that was organizing it was not in the same office because they were all work from home. And so, I mean, it's challenging and I don't want to, I need to be, I'm trying to temper my expectations with what you were given, with the tools that they were given and the opportunities they had. So I don't want my what I'm going to say to be too negative, but I'm glad they held it. I tell you, the one thing that I think I've decided is that for these big events that I want to follow what's going on, I need to stop planning like I'm going to get stuff done that same week.
Especially,
I think it needs to be a bonus. Like during the conference, I could get some work done, but it's really the day after the conference. Like today, I wish I had nothing on my plate so that I could go back and just like really look at the news that came out and stuff, because it feels it's a fire hose during that. It's hard to keep up with, so.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't actually watch that much content during the show.
Me either.
And I plan on handpicking sessions and watching them afterwards.
I'm looking forward to getting into that. One thing I do want to call out before we start diving into just all build stuff, and I meant to do this before we're doing the intro.
Yes.
So when this show comes out, it's going to be a really big week because there's a really big launch happening this week.
There is.
Yes.
About Visual Basic 3.9.1.4. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about it. Oh, that's not what you're talking about? Not that sort of launch?
I was talking about a new chapter that I'm launching for on my course on Voitanos. It's all going to be Azure App Insights and SharePoint Framework.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, not. Although I am excited about that and I look forward to hearing the feedback that from your subscribers. There is also another launch.
Oh, this is the most anticipated launch in a very, very long time. This is going to be the first time on Wednesday, May the 27th, the day after the show comes out, at 4:33 on Wednesday, 4:33 p.m. East Coast time, or for all of you in the non-freedom units, that is 8:33 p.m. UTC or GMT.
Fortunately, we all use the same measures of time, just different time zones. Imagine if it wasn't that. Imagine if it was like, I don't know, 80 minutes in a freedom unit of time as opposed to 60.
Well, like what? The rest of the world would probably be on space time, where we're on like different kind of time. It's like space time is like the universal one.
We'll be on metric time. Yeah. Metric time would be much better.
Yeah, so SpaceX, the Dragon 2 or Dragon Crew, however you want to look at it, the new capsule, this is the first time that the United States is sending a manned mission back to space. This is going to be the first time it's done since 2011, right?
9 years.
So 2011, since the shuttle went back to the space station, and it's the first time that a private company has ever sent a man into orbit. Other Virgin Galactic has had their ship has made it close. I don't know if they've gone above the Cardan line.
They've not gone into orbit.
Right.
I think they're technically in space, but
yeah.
They haven't gone to orbit.
Yeah, they've crossed that line that everyone sees as like the definition between atmosphere and in space, but
I think so.
But yeah, this is going to be huge. I mean, everything looks like it's going well. All the plans for it, they've got everything. I mean, it's going to be the launch is going to be huge, the docking is going to be huge, and then the return is going to be huge as well. So it's going to be, you know, the thing that's going to be I just now dawned on me, does anybody return on this or does it stay up there? Like the crew ones, they always send the cargo ones, they send a Dragon. It's up there for a couple of weeks while they unload it and then load it with garbage and return stuff. And then it returns. And like Soyuz and stuff like that, usually you'll send them up. But I don't know, do they stay attached to ISS or does somebody else get on board and fly home? And if they do, then...
I don't know.
Nobody on board ISS has been trained on this.
Has had training to come back. Yeah. I suspect it stays and then just comes back on its own. And that the other ISS crew, the one that's up there, would come back on their Soyuz. Curious though. I don't know. I have to look into that. I mean, maybe it stays up there a while and then the crew come back on it. I should really know this. This is terrible of me.
Maybe it comes home, this is a real term, maybe it comes home deadhead. And when the next SpaceX crew capsule goes up, it brings the two that went up this time back down.
Yeah, perhaps.
I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know.
Cool.
Maybe they turn it into a bonus room. Leave it attached, put a pool table in it. Boom. Yeah.
Got a 60-inch screen and an Xbox in there.
Exactly.
A wet bar in the corner.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm really looking forward to it. As a STS-135 launch, the last shuttle launch, I'm kind of gutted I'm not there for this one to watch humans take flight from US soil again since that last launch that I was at. But I'll be watching. I'll be dual screening it between the YouTube NASA TV feed and the SpaceX feed.
I haven't decided if I'm going down yet. I'm leaning towards not going down because I know how crazy the crowds were for Falcon Heavy and how long it took me to get home that day. And then there's the whole crowds thing.
Well, NASA are saying to people, please don't. Yeah, it's okay. You've got a HEPA filter in your car. Just stay in your car.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like I drive down, just sit in the car, and I work the whole time instead of getting out. And that's the thing is if you get close, if you get off I-95, you get off the interstate, and you start heading over to Merritt Island where Cape Canaveral and where the launch is, if you get over there, the hard part is getting back to 95 because the traffic is so bad. So you don't want to go too far south, stop a little early and be able to watch it so you can get out of there real quick. But then it's kind of like you're not going to have good cell coverage and so you're not going to be able to see it as well. And I'm like, I think I might want to watch it on my TV.
Just not as good experience. Yeah, I mean, admittedly, when I was there for STS-135, I had a sweet vantage point. So if you don't end up with a sweet vantage point, then you could argue that it's like watching a football game. If you're in the back row of the nosebleeds, it's arguably a better experience from an actual watching the football perspective if you watch it on television, whichever type of football you're watching.
There's got to be something unique about going there for the experience. So like going down for Falcon Heavy, that was an experience because that was the biggest rocket that has launched since Saturn V. And they were bringing the two side boosters back, two side Falcon 9s back. So you got the double, seeing them land. So, I mean, that was an experience.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
It's going to be fun to watch.
I'm going to be tuning in live. I'll have the kids gathered around. Man, talk about pucker factor. Elon has got to be bending quarters with his butt cheeks at this point, right? Like, this is when everything gets real, putting humans in a machine like this and seeing them into orbit. Like, that's a whole different level of seriousness.
Yeah, there's a significant amount of terror. I have a significant amount of terror just in anticipation for this. Like, oh my God, please work. Please work. It's one thing if a rocket blows up. It's another thing when you got people on top. But it's also kind of one of those, everything they've done to prove that everything was going to be fine in the escape thing.
They've flown a lot of times. Yep. And the rocket's well proven as well. So
yeah.
Yep. I wish them the best of luck.
Same.
Not that they need luck. They just need to execute.
Yeah.
We've got so much news to go through.
Yes. Our great, good, and meh first. We'll do that real quick.
Yes. Let's fire through great, good, and meh list.
Okay.
Do you want to go first?
Sure. And a lot of this stuff is in the show notes. So I'm not going to spend too much time talking about these things. I'll do mine and then you do yours and then let's chat for 2-3 minutes about it. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
So my number one things that I was really loving was HTTP REPL. That's like a command. It's kind of like Postman, but doing it straight from the command line with some extra features. Love it. Cross-platform. Love it.
Mm.
There was a Mark Rusinovich chat. There was a session with Mark Rusinovich where he wasn't really presenting. It was more like an interview with Seth Juarez. And it was a lot of like behind the scenes and, you know, what's kind of like the dog fooding project. So you can't go play with the stuff that Rusinovich was showing or talking about. But they had this, I want to go back and watch the session again because there was a thing called Dapper that looked really cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Dapper is interesting.
And then the fact that Build was, you know, everything was online, I did really like that. Is I don't really have too much of an interest to go to Build in person right now. Not because of pandemic, but just in general, I haven't been interested in going there for the last few years.
Here's an interesting stat that I saw. 6,000 people went in person last year. 230,000 registered for Build this year.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
My great is Azure Static Sites. So basically taking what we did with Hugo and doing it as a static site, but there's a lot of like out-of-the-box stuff that they do to simplify it, although there's still some questions that I have for it. At any rate, I love what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Azure AD external users, that's a really cool thing that they've added.
Hmm.
Now, my meh stuff is the scripted presentations. I have a strong distaste for these, like the second keynote they did with Scott Hanselman. I hated that.
Yeah.
The conference site itself, and this is hard for me to say this because I think I know the people who actually work on this, but the conference site is very frustrating to use, so much so that I watched the first few keynotes on the first day and then I gave up. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to wait until the content is online. I kept checking. And then I finally found a spot where the lady who's in charge of the production of the whole show said on Twitter and her personal Twitter account that we're going to have all the recordings up on Channel 9 afterwards. And I was like, I'm done. I will bookmark sessions I want to go see, but I'm getting too frustrated trying to find stuff. Is it live if it's not live? The filters didn't work. The search didn't work. Nothing. It wasn't reliable. Same issue you had. I wish they would do the site kind of like YouTube TV or one of these other ones where there's live content and there's recorded content. And I can easily tell there's channels and I can tune into a channel and see all the stuff about the channel and what else is going on. I wish they would do something like that. So yeah. That's my great, good, and meh.
Sounds good. My great. C-sharp 9 I'm very excited about, which is a kind of weird one to be excited about, but I still do quite a lot of C-sharp development, and it'll matter for .NET Core and all of that sort of stuff, right? So C-sharp 9 has a bunch of new features that I've been wanting for a long time. I thought that was pretty good. A couple of statistics I thought were really good. GitHub, 50 million developers use GitHub. 75 million daily active users for Teams. I thought that was really great to hear about. Those are really good stats. Okay, the good, those were my greats. The good, I thought, was Microsoft Lists. Now, I know you and I might not see completely eye to eye on this, but I was actually pleasantly surprised from what I saw about Microsoft Lists. I think, like, Lists and SharePoint have sucked for a long time, and I kind of like where they're going with it. And then meh was the working from home keynote. Just the, like, dude, I do not care to meet your dog. I do not care to see your kids in the background. I know you're trying to be relatable, but I'm not here for that. I'm here for the news and the information.
Mm-hmm.
So get to the point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the wandering around the house. And I mean, I didn't mind Nat sitting, you know, Nat Friedman sitting out in his yard talking about GitHub stuff. Like, that was fine. That was fine with me. But it was more like the sort of the let's try to be funny, but sort of scripted funny. And I just thought it fell flat, at least for me.
It did for me as well. And I made a comment to someone. It felt very, and I think you're referring to the Scott Hanselman keynote.
That section in particular.
Yeah.
It wasn't just him, but it was that section of the keynote. I thought the keynote got better as things went on.
I did too. I really did not like it. Like, I strongly disliked it. And to me, it felt like, number one, it felt like he was trying to be like having a conversation one-on-one with someone and then being a bit ADD and jumping in and calling other friends and seeing what they're working on. And then someone calls him and acting like it was a random thing. And then it felt like I was Zoom bombing somebody else's video call with one of their colleagues. And the whole scripted thing about working from home, it's what you're doing is not novel. The entire world is doing that right now. Don't act like it's freaking novel and don't bring attention to here's all the stuff that we're doing. All the crap with like they were showing like different camera angles of here's my view of my screen. And look, I've even got a 50-inch TV with the teleprompter going. So you can tell how scripted this really is. It's like, we can already tell. I don't need that. I do not go to Microsoft or Apple or Oracle or Facebook or Twitter or any of these tech companies. I don't go there for entertainment. If I want entertainment, I'm going to Netflix. I came to you guys for tech. Don't give me this. Anyway, yeah.
I don't mind it being entertaining, like as part of a keynote. If somebody's a really good presenter, then it's engaging and entertaining at the same time, right? But when it just gets to the point where it's just, I don't know, it just felt very disingenuous and fake. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so that was good, great, or great, good, and meh. Mm-hmm. Shall we move on to some of the news? Well, some, quite a lot of the news.
Oh, we're going to go through a bunch.
Excellent.
This episode is sponsored by Raygun. Raygun provides full-stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full-stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your codebase, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com and get up and running within minutes and dramatically improve the online experiences of your users. This podcast is brought to you by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you definitely should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities and most recently, a new eSign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to sprint it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at nintex.com. And we're back.
All right, AC, we have a ton of links here. We are not going to get through all of these, I'm sure.
No.
But we've sort of roughly categorized these into sort of general Microsoft stuff, some development stuff, some Azure stuff. We've got some quickies. Don't take that the wrong way. We've got Microsoft 365, and we've got some Microsoft 365 quickies as well. We're going to go through, pick out our favorites and link to them in the show notes and just sort of recap on some of the highlights from the show in terms of the news and announcements that really came out. So would you like to kick things off for us?
So first section I want to cover here is on developers. There are two things in particular that really stood out to me. So one of them, as I mentioned earlier, HTTP REPL. So if you're not familiar, this is mainly for the devs. So if you're not familiar with what a REPL is, it's basically like a real-time command line. You can interact with a command line and like think of it kind of like a CLI. I like to look at this as like almost like I'm looking using like Postman slash command line slash interactive kind of thing. So what this is, it's a .NET global app, which means you can install it. If you have the .NET core installed on your machine, you use the .NET command line tool to install this from a global registry. And what this will do is you point to a URL of a RESTful endpoint, and it automatically can look at a Swagger file and figure out stuff about the API. So I can do like, once I say .NET, HTTP REPL, HTTP, localhost, whatever, I hit that, and then it goes through and figures out, okay, there's a Swagger file, I can use that. Now, go ahead. And so it shows the command prompt as now, instead of being like a folder, I'm at a URL. So if I do a DIR, it's going to list out, here are the endpoints. You have a fruit endpoint, you have a people endpoint, and it supports get and post. So then I go, okay, CD people, and it jumps over to the people list. And I can do a DIR on that. And it's like, I can do a get and a post, and here are the parameters that it's also expecting, like, I don't know, ID. So
nice.
It makes it super easy to very quickly look at an API. And then the other thing that I thought was really cool was Visual Studio Code Spaces. And so we kind of talked about this a couple weeks ago when GitHub did their Code Spaces thing. I'll admit I'm a little fuzzy on why is what Microsoft doing and how is what GitHub is doing, how are they different? It looks to me like they're basically the same thing. It's just that GitHub has made it to where you can launch it straight from a repo in GitHub, but it's underlying kind of the same technology. But I still think it's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, nice. That's rad. On my similar theme of C# 9, we'll link to the post is really long and has a bunch of, sorry, it's not really long. It's quite long with all the comments, but they've got a bunch of features wrapped up into one blog post here. But if you write C#, this will be a really nice language syntactical feature additions, if you will. They've got things like init-only properties about, you know, when you're setting up a new object. They've got the one that I really am interested in back from my VB days is with expressions. You remember with expressions?
Yeah, I didn't have gray hair back then.
Yeah. It's kind of like VBs, except it's sort of a non-destructive mutation, as they call it. Anyway, you can create a new object based off another one with certain property differences, and it'll basically clone the other thing. And they've got a bunch of others. I won't go through all of these, but if you write a lot of C#, you should definitely go check out this post, because it's kind of one of those things that I think once you start writing with this new syntax sugar, you're not going to be able to go back. The CLI has apparently supported a bunch of these things for some time. It's just the languages haven't caught up. So there you go.
Very cool. Is that all of our developer stuff we wanted to share?
Mostly. Sort of languagey, sort of dev tool-y kind of things, yeah.
We do have other links too. We're not covering these, but if you're looking for, we have links to the Build website, the main conference website. We have the Channel 9 site for where you'll find a bunch of the recordings. They also have a YouTube channel, a Microsoft Developer YouTube channel, has a bunch of content. And then I put three links to different news articles that Microsoft got some good attention in the press. Notably, one I've never seen before, but Build was mentioned on CNN and how here's how you can do a virtual conference and Microsoft shows you can do it. I was like, that's impressive.
That's cool.
That was one of the leading links that came back when I did a search for Build conference on Google. That was the number one link that came back was right after the Build conference. It was the CNN article. I was like that. And it was not a paid article, a paid ad. So I was like, well done. And then I got a link to The Verge and CNBC, which did more on the business side. So I guess we can pivot over to some Azure-ish stuff. And then we have some Microsoft 365 stuff. I thought that probably the thing that I found is the most, one of the most interesting things that the Build guys came out with was something around Azure AD. And as much as we've jumped on their case, this is one of those things that it feels like, and I'm going to come back to how I'm talking about this when we talk about lists. But the title of this was Evolving Azure AD for Every User and Any Identity with External Identities. Now, if you're a dev and you've worked with B2B or B2C or you know a lot about Azure AD, you're like, I can kind of do this already, can't I? And what they did is they've done more work in this area to make not only the experience better for developers, the experience better for the user and the experience better for the admins. And it doesn't, they've only done a few things. I can tell it was a good bit of work to do, but I really like what they've done here. So what they did, they did a couple different things. They made it incredibly easy for you to enable self-service sign up using social IDs. And you actually do that through Microsoft Graph. So they show how to go about doing that. They also do, gotta love the work from home, man. So what kind of a smoothie are you having today?
I'll just turn myself on while that smoothie's being made in the background. I'll be right back.
Other things that they do, so they made it to where you can use things like, when we could already do this before, but using like Google, using Facebook, and that's on the sign-in that pops up. That's not like you would normally do that like in your browser experience, but now when you click it, it takes you over to Azure AD to go sign in. And you'd get that standard Azure AD kind of looking sign-in. You can now choose, no, I want to sign in with Google or I want to sign in with Facebook. Another thing that you can do as well is that now when someone signs in, you can have branding stuff applied to it. And you're like, well, I could already do this before too. I could put my name in there. I could put my image in there. No, but this is cool because what you can do is you can add custom attributes to your app to where you could do things like ask people, hey, now that you've logged in, we need more information for you to really register you in our directory. Things like your name, your business name, your registration code, your phone number. If you need to collect that additional information, that's all going to be stored. You're like, okay, that's kind of cool. Here's where things start to get really neat with this though. This is a couple of things that they've done where you can actually have these users before these users that you would add as external users or that would get added to your Azure AD. They don't just go into the big bucket of an external user. They actually go into a bucket of an external user for this app.
Nice.
Right? So they're segmenting things that way. And they also, if you haven't noticed too, you got these external users in your Azure AD, which that's a little scary to kind of have external users in your AD and let anybody use them. And especially when these things have been out there for a while, you can actually set it up to say, if this person hasn't logged in the last 60 days, delete them.
Yeah, that's nice. The thing I think the most scary about a whole bunch of users, you see all these external guests and whatnot in your Azure AD, and you've got no idea why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know if it's because somebody invited them to a site, or if somebody shared a document with them or added them to a team, or if they're not supposed to be there. You know, you've really got no idea. At least, I'm sure there are tools that will help tell you, but that's pretty freaky. So I'm glad to see them considering these scenarios. So this is like them mashing B2C and B2B Azure AD together. Because previously you had to choose, right? You had to say, I wanted a B2C directory, I guess, for want of a better word, or a B2B directory. And you could create externals in your B2B, but you just couldn't manage them very well. Whereas B2C, you're almost like creating accounts for people. So it seems like there might be capabilities from both that are being brought into one thing here. I don't know. I'll have to do some more thinking about that. But yeah. It's nice. It's going to really help.
It really is. I do like what they've done with this.
Microsoft Lists. So this is M365, Microsoft 365 news. Microsoft Lists is the new app for Teams, SharePoint, and Outlook. So basically, okay, cutting to the chase, it's SharePoint Lists, right? Except with new UI. And SharePoint Lists are old tech, right? They've been around for over a decade and much longer, in fact, right? And they really have not had a lot of love. Microsoft Lists is kind of like To-Do. Like To-Do is to tasks in Outlook, right? So Microsoft Lists will be, is a bunch of separate apps, right? So you can get an iOS app and all that sort of stuff. You can get it in Teams. You can get it in SharePoint as well, obviously. There's a bunch of UI refresh and all of that. But under the hood, it's SharePoint Lists is my understanding. So to me, it feels like this evolution of the picking apart of SharePoint. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like they're taking the bits of SharePoint that are left, right, and giving them new life. Like maybe I'm not doing a good job of explaining this.
No, you are.
But OneDrive is a document library. But now people think of OneDrive and document libraries as two different things. But OneDrive is just a document library at the end of the day. And so now that sort of OneDrive is now the app. But Microsoft Lists is kind of like now the app for SharePoint Lists. And people will stop thinking of SharePoint Lists as SharePoint Lists over time, I think. That was kind of a waffly ramble, but...
No, I get what you're saying. To me, they've taken lists, they've put some attention to them, and they've bumped them up a level so that now they're treated as a first-class app in the waffle menu and eventually over in Teams. Whereas before, when I wanted to create a list, I had to go, okay, which site do I want to put this in?
Exactly.
And you now have the ability to create your list inside a personal list that is going to be stored in your OneDrive. We could probably do an entire episode on this. So when I saw this news, I'm not negative on this. Okay. I don't want to come across like that. I get what they're doing. And you're right. They're making it more accessible, similar to how they did with like document libraries. But to me, I'm having a hard time really wrapping my brain around this because I saw this huge push at Build about this week, which strange, not a developer thing. And I get they missed their conference. They didn't get their SharePoint conference and stuff. But still, it's a weird thing to talk about at Build and to launch it this week being a developer conference because this is not a developer construct.
No.
I know you can get an API, you can get to a blah, blah, but it's not a developer construct.
Yep.
The other thing too is that, so I went and I listened to the podcast that they did with the people who own this feature that Microsoft did on their IntraZone podcast. I went and read their blog post. I watched the video about it. I read all the stuff about I could about it. And I'm looking at this and I'm just like, so let me get this straight. You guys have just taken lists in SharePoint. You gave it a little bit more UX kind of coolness to it.
Pizzazz.
You bumped it up a level so that now I can see it as a first class thing and I don't really have to think about where it's going to go when I create my list. I can just create my list. And you also realize that things that you used to have like list templates a long time ago that you took away, people really wanted them. So you're making a big deal about adding them back. And I kind of feel like I also have on good authority that there were a bunch of developers that worked on this for a year. And so I'm looking at a bunch of developers working on this for a year. We still don't have a mobile app yet. I'm looking at all this marketing and explanation. I'm listening to the guys that own it and all the stuff they're talking about. And I'm like, I think you're kind of overhyping this because this doesn't seem like it's all that much. And that's what I've come to. I've done my best over the last couple of days to ask the question multiple times, what am I not getting? What is so big about this that you're making this to be big? Which to me, it's like, okay, cool feature. But I would have thought the Azure AD thing should have gotten a hell of a lot more press when I compare it to lists. And so I'm just like,
Definitely.
But they didn't.
If somebody's dead on the floor and you get a defibrillator and you successfully resuscitate them, That's pretty good news, right? I sort of look at it like that.
Oh my God. Okay. I wasn't going to go that far.
SharePoint lists to me were dead and buried. Like the last time, I can't even name the last time I chose a SharePoint list to store anything years ago.
Yeah, that's how I am. I use spreadsheets because it's easier and it's faster.
Yeah, exactly. So I sort of see it like, yeah, you're right. It doesn't warrant as big a news as some of these other things. But I quite like that they're being resuscitated to a degree.
Yeah.
What's weird about this, it's sort of like 5 years too late in that there were plans for SharePoint lists when I worked on the WSS team that were like this, right? Yonks ago, like back in 2009, where apps like Airtable, do you remember that? There was a cloud, There was an app back then like Airtable, but called something or other DB. I can't remember what it was called. And it was pretty sweet. Like you could manipulate lists like an Excel spreadsheet. You could work with different data types really easily. And a lot of the same concepts are true in this new Microsoft list thing. But SharePoint lists have just not had any love for, you know, probably a decade and maybe a little bit less with some of the new modern UI. But anyway, my point is I'm kind of glad some innovations being made, or some improvements, I should say. It's hardly innovative, but some improvements are being made, and it's nice to see, I don't know, an old favorite, SharePoint lists, get a bit of a new lease on life.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, customers are going to love this, and it's going to get a lot of use, and it's going to make things more productive because you can do a lot of the same stuff you could before. I guess there's some things that, you know, immediate questions came up where, okay, so if I create a list and I'm, say it's a personal list, and then I invite you into working with my personal list. And so now that you and I are collaborating on my list in my site and or in my OneDrive, and then all of a sudden we get more people using it and someone's like, we should make this, you know, a bigger thing. And then all of a sudden
it's got all the same SharePoint hangups.
And then I get canned.
I'm sure.
I get fired somehow. And then all of a sudden my data's in my OneDrive and nobody else has access anymore. And I go away. And it's just the same.
Your my site goes away? Or your MyBury?
Yeah. And I lose my Power Apps, and you guys lose access to my Power Apps. You lose access to my flows, and it's like, oh yeah, we got to have a way to do this. We can have team lists, and I'm just, here's the thing. This to me, this hit me yesterday. It took me a while to figure this out, but this is something I've had a frustration with, or I've struggled with on the SharePoint side. And maybe this is a problem. Maybe this is an Andrew problem. Maybe this is not a problem that other people have. And maybe it's because I'm too damn organized. I try and keep things too organized in my head. I'm not organized, but I try and keep things organized in my head. And it just feels like the Microsoft 365 team, they're constantly adding features to stuff without thoughts about things down the road. And I feel that year upon year upon year, we're introducing so much technical debt that companies in three, four, 5 years are looking at going, how do I wrap my brain around all of this stuff? I talked to a company yesterday, 400,000 employees, and they're like, we can't get any kind of analytics on what people are actually using in our bills and all that kind of stuff. It just feels to me like it's a lot of that just technical cruft is just keep building it. There's things about lists that I didn't get.
It's a lot of its legacy as well.
They got with lists, they were talking about, hey, you can build rules. And this lady that was talking about rules, she goes, oh yeah, and the way I like to use them is that when somebody adds a new item to my list, I send myself an email. I'm like, wait, I thought, what about flow? I thought that you were supposed to use flow for that stuff. And then maybe a rule is a flow.
It is flow, yeah.
Is it?
Well, I'm pretty sure it is. That's what it looks like to me. But anyway, this is all built, like, I would have liked them to have looked at this as a, if it wasn't the SharePoint team building this, what would we build? Because I think there's a ton of
bingo
legacy baggage that comes with these sorts of things. Like you've mentioned, that is based on the fact that it's based on SharePoint behind the scenes. And so I would have rather had a better way to do it would be to take a fresh crack at it rather than saying, well, we're the SharePoint team, we should build something with SharePoint. But I mean, they get there faster with it, perhaps, but with it comes a bunch of baggage. Admittedly, there are a lot of benefits, like that you get workflow integration, obviously, straight out of the box, and you get a bunch of enterprise-type governance and security capabilities right out of the box. It would take a lot of time to rebuild, but you also get a lot of baggage with that.
So it immediately starts bringing questions. Oh, it's a SharePoint list. Oh, okay, cool. So can I do column formatting? Yes, you can do column formatting. Oh, like the JSON stuff that we can do? That's not clear. It's not the same thing. Oh, okay. Well, can I then customize the list the same way I can with a normal SharePoint list? Because these are just SharePoint lists. So if it's just a SharePoint list, I can customize it the same way, right? So I can add like a SharePoint framework to a list customizer and add my own buttons to it and then do the same thing with field controls. And like, no, so that doesn't work in like mobile and that's not going to work. And I'm like,
too many caveats.
If you're saying it's a list and all you really did was change a lowercase L to a capital L, put the word Microsoft in front of it and promote it. All these other things that we did before, you're inheriting this baggage, which may be good stuff, maybe bad baggage, maybe good baggage, but you may look at it and go, there's just pieces to this that just, I just feel like we're building technical debt. And from the developer side of me, it just, I have an apprehension towards it. I get that people are going to use it. I get it's a good feature. I congratulate them and they're getting a lot of good press out of it. I'm looking at it like, there's got to be more to this. I can't imagine this little feature just is that big of a deal, but whatever.
Fair enough. I'm glad we see eye to eye on that. I think we did.
Azure moved something from private preview to public preview this week as well.
Ooh, what's that?
Synapse Analytics. And the idea here is that this is all about a limitless analytics service for working with very, very big data sets, like data warehouses and stuff like that. They announced it at Ignite last year. A lot of people in the private preview have been very, very happy with it. And they have added some additional capabilities to it, and they've moved it into public preview for things like, they've added things like a thing called a team silo. So it enables teams to collaborate on analytics instead of just having things like a giant project that you want to do, or having a data silo where you can have all this data in there, but I still want to just segment part of it and have access to just part of that data. Or maybe a skills silo where I can say, no, I only want to be able to data that's related to this one kind of category. I only want people to be able to use it for that. So they've actually got a virtual event coming up, a virtual summit that's coming up. And I got a link to it in the show notes where they can, where you can jump in, you can learn more about it and tune into their virtual event that's coming up on June 17th, I think.
I'll have to look at that. I'm not looked at it much, not played with it, obviously, and know very little about it. So I'll have to check that out.
It's one of those things that so many of the things with Azure, they deal with things at a giant scale. And if you're not a giant company, then I get the value, but I don't really get to play with it and I have to kind of judge what other people say. And so this is one of those things that's kind of like, I've got a lot of data. Does it apply to me? Oh, maybe not. Okay. Well, it still looks cool.
Yeah, nice. APIs. So there is a new API, To-Do API, coming to Graph, which is quite nice. I know to-dos are one of your tasks, are like your most favorite thing in the world that Microsoft does multiple times over. But there is a new API for tasks which wrap up access to tasks that are in To-Do and in Planner, I believe, that you'll be able to get access to through one set of To-Do. They're calling them To-Do APIs, but they really should just, I guess, call them Tasks APIs.
This was the other part about lists I didn't understand, because they were talking about lists and going, look, you can create To-Do items. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought we just went through that. I thought we just consolidated that. You're adding another tool.
Yeah. But when you think about tasks across things like Teams and Microsoft To-Do and Outlook and Planner and all that sort of stuff, there are a lot of places tasks pop up. And Microsoft is seemingly trying to do a reasonable job of rationalizing that over time. They're in the process of it, I think. And so I'm really glad that they've opted for one API for this for the moment, as opposed to five different APIs to try and do this. But yeah, there's just some details in this post we'll link off to. So we'll have an API to go create tasks.
Going back to what we just talked about with the lists and now like what to do and a comment I just made. If you're listening to this show, does anything that CJ and I are saying, does that resonate with any of you? Or are we just completely off the mark when it comes to some of this stuff?
Right. Is this just us being like Statler and Waldorf in the off on the sidelines?
I wonder if I'm the only one, if I've got this and just say, nah, you're just grumpy about this stuff. And I'm like, okay, that very well may be. I mean, am I going to use lists? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. To me, a spreadsheet's still easier.
Yeah.
You want some Firehose Azure?
Yeah, go for it. And then let's move on to our picks.
I have a Firehose Azure and I have a Firehose M365 set of links that just let everybody know the links that are in the show notes. Firehose Azure links. There's some big storage enhancements with Azure Blobs about data recovery and data protection, failing over. There's a versioning preview capability that's there, point-in-time restore, stuff like that. They announced general availability of Spot virtual machines, which are great for things like batches, batch jobs, deployment and development and test, stateless apps, short-lived jobs that are more than like containers, but you want to use a VM instead. And another one is they announced in preview something called Azure Front Door Rules Engine. So it allows you to take advantage of rules to customize the front door behavior to meet the needs of your customers and allows you to do like specific routing needs to give you more control about how you want to define and enforce what content gets served and where it gets served. And they have a bunch of new scenarios that are enabled with this and a blog post to kind of explaining some of this stuff.
Very nice.
We also have, if you look at the show notes too, that we have links for M365. What's new in Microsoft Teams announced at Build and what's new Microsoft Graph announced at Build as well, because that is all related to
kind of wrap up. Yeah, nice.
Cloudy stuff.
Sweet. Shall we do the picks?
Let's do them, man.
This podcast is brought to you by AvePoint. If you like The Cloud Show, you will love the Shift Happens podcast with Microsoft MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation projects. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably arise when ambitious people try to impact their workplace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to www.avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag Shift Happens. That's one word, hashtag Shift Happens, wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show. What you got for us?
All right, AC. So you know Google, right? The search engine.
Mm-hmm.
So they named their company after a number, right? Which is the Google.
Mm-hmm.
And the Google is 10 to the power of 100, right? It's a number. It's a really big number.
Right.
And a guy set out to build a Lego reduction gear that reduces from one to a Google in Lego.
Oh my God.
So it's composed of 186 Lego gears. And basically, in effect, he's got a motor spinning really, really fast. And then he slowly reduces it, you know, reduces the turn using gears, reduces the revolutions, I suppose, from every one revolution of the motor to 10 to the power of 100 revolutions in the last gear, which I saw some comment in the thread that he has this little Lego character attached to the last gear, and that the Lego character will turn, you know, like one every bajillion years or whatever it is. I can't remember what the number of years are, but
an insane
number of years. But it's mind-boggling. You know what's? It's like that chessboard problem where you put like, well, not problem, that chessboard visualization where you put one grain of rice on one square and then you double it for each square. You go across the chessboard and you fill up all the chess pieces, all the squares. So you'd be like one on the first, two on the second, four, eight, 16, blah, blah, blah. And there would not be enough rice in the world to fill the last square on the chessboard.
I haven't seen that. That's cool.
I don't actually know if that's true, but that's what I've always heard.
It's a good story.
It's my fact, okay?
Yeah, don't worry about it. Don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. Go on. Right.
I've heard it's the case. I mean, the power of numbers are pretty powerful. So, but similar sort of thing with this, like, it's, you know, like the power of numbers is pretty powerful.
Oxygen's pretty important too, CJ.
Importance is pretty important. But yeah, you just notice how quickly the motor is turning in the first gear and then how slow it's turning, even in the third or fourth gear. It's incredible. And then there's just absolutely no sign of movement, basically, you know, after, you know, six or seven gears, right? It's just not perceivable. But this guy gets up to one Google of reduction.
So I saw this, and so this, I was like, that's pretty cool. Of course, I saw it right next to another Google video or another Facebook video about Lego where someone has built and is selling a set for the launch tower for the Saturn V Lego. Did you see?
Yeah.
I almost used that as my pick this week.
Yeah.
But
I really want one of those.
The more I watched this video, the more and I saw the very end where he shows it working. And you're right. The big thing to me was like, God, it really steps down at like the third or the fourth gear. And he went like 100 and some odd gears. I'm thinking, dude, anywhere along the way, this thing could become totally broken. And you would never know because it's moving so damn
slow. That's right. You wouldn't live long enough to know that the guy didn't turn.
Exactly.
Not even a little bit.
I can tell him, you know what? I did it too. And I did it in 400 gears.
That's right.
Prove I didn't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Prove it working. Yeah. So yes, that's my one. How about you? What do you got for us this week?
I finally got one of my two Kickstarters that has been held up in China due to the pandemic was finally delivered yesterday or 2 days ago. There are some Kickstarters that you're like, I'm going to back this because this is cool. And the other one is, I'm going to back this because I'm going to use this. And this is actually what I've been wanting. Mm. And dude, got it. Oh, you can't see. Sorry.
The blue screen booted out. Yeah.
There we go. A virtual background's on. So let me kill my virtual background this. So what this is one of the first GAN charger. And so a GAN charger, if you're familiar with like a normal charger you'd have for like a laptop or for your iPhone or for your whatever, for your tablets, they're made of mostly of silicon and lithium, right? And the thing that's nice about these GAN chargers is that there are...
That's the type of charger, right? That's not the name of it.
Right. It's a GAN, gallium, I think it's called gallium nitride is the chemical that they use with them. There's a couple things about this. You don't need as many components to build one of these. So it's smaller. So it is about the size of a credit card, but the thickness of like a MacBook Pro plug. Overall, it's smaller than a MacBook Pro plug. Just so... to get your perspective on it. So this is my MacBook Pro plug over here, and it's a little bit smaller.
Two-thirds of the size.
Yeah, it's like two-thirds the size. But then here's the really cool thing about this guy. First of all, these have both been plugged in. The silicon style, it gets hot. And with electronics, heat coming off electronics shows inefficiency. And that's just, it's a,
gotcha.
And silicone is inefficient. This guy does not get hot. He is much more efficient. And so he's able to charge things incredibly fast. Here's the other thing that I really like about this. It has
multiple ports.
Yeah. Two USB-Cs that are 100 watts apiece and two USB-As that are 18 watts apiece. I was able to charge my laptop, my 12-inch iPad that's USB-C, both of those are USB-C, and an iPhone and two iPhones, and I fully charged all of them in significantly less time than it normally charges. And it gets better. The only thing I don't like about it is that it sticks way off the wall with a plug there, but it comes with an international kit and you don't swap pieces out. You simply plug an additional, you slide another piece in on this guy and it just still plugs right in the wall the same way it normally does. So it doesn't add at all bulky. This thing is like,
nice.
This thing is awesome. I ended up getting three of these. My wife got one, I got one, and I have one more and I haven't decided what I'm going to do with it. But yeah, I've been waiting for them for a while. They've been finished since they almost got finished in December and then factory started closing and I've been waiting for it to get here and it's been taking 2 weeks for me to actually get it here. So
Wow. That's cool, man. I want to get one of those. Those are great.
I was making sure that I didn't need to keep this third one because I was actually going to send you the third one, but I have to make sure I can do it first.
Okay, fair enough.
It's from the company Hyper. If you've gotten one of these before, like I've got their little port for their dock port for iPad stuff, but it's I have a link to it on their site.
It looks nice. Looks good build quality too.
Oh, it is. It's very good build quality. Very good build quality.
Hey, we also have a listener pick this week from one of our longtime listeners. He actually is really good about sending us links for listener picks. He regularly sends us interesting stuff. This is from Jeffrey Byrd, B-Y-R-D. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And it's a YouTube video called If Rockets Were Transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of an animation / augmented reality type video. Augmented reality. It's like animation laid over with real footage as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically an animation of what it looks like with the fuel draining from rockets as they launch. And it's got four rockets side by side. It's got the Saturn V, the moon rocket. It's got Space Shuttle. Or STS, Space Transportation System. I think I get that right.
Yep.
It's got Falcon 9 Heavy, and it's got the new SLS side by side. And it's fascinating watching how all the different tanks drain at different rates and how they do this, you know, what happens during staging and why staging is important for some of these things. Anyway, if you're a rocket nerd, definitely go check this out. It's pretty cool to see how all the different setups and the... I was sort of thinking about the pros and cons of different ones and stuff as they're launching, and it's just really interesting. So go check that out, and thank you very much to Jeffrey for sending this in.
This is a really cool one. I saw this one floating around. So when he sent this, it's like, oh yeah, I've seen this. This is cool. I love the SpaceX one and how you can really see how the center stage is not going at full throttle while it's going up. It's the two external boosts. The two external Falcons are the ones that are pushing majority of the weight.
It really makes you think about how much weight these rockets are lifting,
mm-hmm.
right? Just in fuel. And the ratio of payload to fuel is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And how much, you know, like the, I can't remember what the name of the equation is, but the law of diminishing returns in terms of your payload size and the size of your rocket and how much more power you have to add just to lift the fuel, incremental amounts of fuel. Anyway, very interesting. So thanks again to Jeffrey for sending that in.
Yes, thank you very much, Jeffrey. Really appreciate it. Fantastic pick, as all of your picks. I look forward to it when I see you get a little alert that you've submitted another pick to our Facebook page.
Yeah.
Love it.
And anybody who's listening, please do the same.
Yes.
Be great to hear from you. Feedback or picks or whatever, just send us a little note. It'd be great.
Absolutely.
All right, AC, let's wrap this up. Good chatting. Lots of news this week. We will talk to you next week.
And we will... have a successful SpaceX launch tomorrow when this comes out.
Tomorrow when this comes out. Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent. We'll
That'll
talk
cool.
about it next week.
Yeah, man.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in your favorite podcast app. It helps people find out about our show and grow our audience, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play it on the show. You can also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll get notices of each episode as well as the show notes sent to you directly each week. We'll be back with a new episode next week. Thanks for listening.